They were driving into Garmouth before Mother said defensively, "You do remember Prudy, don't you?" "Course I remember Prudy," snapped Anne. "She did look after me till I was 8. "I've seen her since," said Mother. "She's changed. Her hair's gone grey." Mother made it sound like the end of the world. For Mother, it would have been.
"But I'm sure she'll look after you," added Mother, "like she always did."
"Yes," said Anne flatly.
"I'm grateful to Prudy for taking you, of course, but I'll not pretend she's ideal. She knows her place, but Arthur, that brother of hers, a waster, never made anything of himself even by their standards. He takes advantage, given half a chance. You'll need to watch him."
"What is he? A rapist?
I wish you wouldn't talk like that."
The sea came into view at the end of Front Street, Garmouth.
"I had such fun here as a child," said Mother, "just after the war. Prudy took me to the beach every day when she was my nanny. This was all seaside shops then, buckets and spades and those windmill things you hold in your hand."
Anne eyed 3 pubs, a Roman Catholic church and presbytery, and the front of the Carlton Cinema, all obviously pre-war. Mother was having her fantasy of innocent childhood again. They turned right at the Victoria Jubilee clock tower and plunged down steeply. Anne gasped with pleasure. They were running down into a deep little bay between the 2 great headlands. The headland on the left was red sandstone with red sandstone ruins on top, ruins like crumbling hands with fingers pointing skywards. Ruins with pointed gables and empty lancet windows. Just enough left to imagine the ghost of a great church. Below the ruins, on the incredibly green grass, huddled an army of tombstones. Some red like the ruins, some black obelisks, and the occasional glitter of white marble. They clustered right to the edge of the cliff. "The sea must eat away the cliff," thought Anne. "Some wild nights, bones long buried in earth must receive final burial in the sea."
"Garmouth Priory," said Mother, "where all the old sea captains are buried."
At the bottom of the hill, they rumbled across a wooden bridge. Looking over the side, Anne saw a disused railway track smothered in brambles.
"That's the old wagon way," said Mother. "You'll have lots to explore."
The car began to climb up onto the further headland. This was emptier, just one long white building on top.
"That's them," said Mother.
"Prudy, in that big house." Mother laughed unkindly.
"Oh, they don't live there. That's Brigade Watch House. They live behind, in Brigade Cottage."
The road ended at the watch house, which loomed over them as they got out of the car. Built of long white planks, sagging with the years, it had a maritime look, like a mastless, roofed-in schooner becalmed in a sea of dead grass, single story like a church hall. Through its windows showed a dark clutter of things that couldn't be recognised. This clutter and a lack of curtains made the windows look like eyes in a white planked face. On the right, a wing stuck out. Anne could make out a rack of billiard cues inside and a billiard table under a green cover. At the far end was a white planked tower also full of windows. Anne felt a delicious little shudder. The watch house was well named. It did seem to watch you, but it was only the effect of dark windows in white walls. The dead grass of the garden revealed hints of wreckage. Flaked white railings struggled up, only to collapse groundwards in long loops. There were rusty things among the grass roots, anchors, chains, something that might be a cannon. At the end of the garden, the cliff edge dropped sheer to the blue distances of the River Gar, with tugboats moving, smaller than toys. There was an entrance in the base of the tower. Just beyond, a great wooden figure thrust upwards through the grass. A ship's figurehead, a warrior with cracked shield and broken helmet.